Please enjoy this previously recorded segment.
Welcome to the HR Power Hour, presented by Career Management Associates. I'm David Chulo. It's about all things in the human resource world. We're going to bring in local, regional, and national guests, and we're going to talk about a variety of topics and explain why human resource management is critical to your business success so that you can make decisions to keep and retain great talent. Welcome to the HR Power Hour, presented by CMAcareer.com and Verrill-Law.com. I'm your host, David Chulo, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour, educational HR radio. Today, our guest is Peter Hayes, president and co-founder of Health Purchase Alliance of Maine. We've had him on the show before. We're excited to have him back. Peter, welcome to the show.
I'm glad to be here. Look forward to the conversation.
Yeah, no, it's going to be great. Jeez, there's nothing going on in healthcare today, Peter. I'm not exactly sure why we're here. Let's be honest about that, huh?
Yeah, no, it's just a little blip on the screen. There's nothing going on.
Well, I got to tell you, certainly in the last couple of years with the pandemic and the focus on healthcare that has been provided by everyone and focused on by everybody, it's really come to the forefront even more than it ever did. It was really all about price before, right? Oh my God, increasing prices, all these things. But it suddenly became that these first responders, the nurses, the doctors, the healthcare providers, the benefit plans, the everything became incredibly important and incredibly urgent. And there was a lot of things that happened, a lot of requirements, a lot of things that have changed. But where are we today? What's going on today, 2022? What do organizations, what do individual organizations need to think about or deal with today when it comes to healthcare purchasing?
Yeah, I mean, I think you make great points. The landscape has really changed. There's been lots of things. There may be some silver linings in COVID. There certainly have just been huge disruption for all of us. I think to answer your question, it's still very much about price. I mean, it really is a huge affordability issue. I mean, they're saying, I mean, the average family premium now is about $30,000 a year. That's over 30% of household budgets. I mean, that used to be you couldn't get finance for a mortgage at over 30% of the household budget. So it's a huge affordability issue. More importantly, Maine has some of the highest deductibles, but I mean, we've pushed deductibles pretty high. 70% of Americans have less than $1,000 in the bank. So if you have a high deductible plan, even stitches can be a catastrophic event. I mean, you don't have the savings to pay for it. So it's a real cost issue. It's also a real access issue. Certainly with COVID, certainly the pressures around mental health. There's lots of primary care docs and others that are retiring. There's staffing issues that you have described. So the access issue has become really front and center. And employers are really worried about their workforces. I mean, during COVID, there were an awful lot of cancer screenings and patients that weren't getting care. So there's still going to be a kind of a run out of the effects of COVID well into the future about people have delayed care, postponed care. So yeah, there are just a lot of things going on. Later this morning, we'll talk about, for the first time, there's some really interesting things happening around finally getting to hospitals having to post prices and getting to transparency. That's really illustrating some things around the price side. And also, there's a lot more evidence or conversations about the quality side of healthcare. Not all hospitals, not all providers are the same. So I think it's a much broader discussion now. There's, in the last loop of that, as you talked about, there are a lot of primary care docs retiring, others retiring, even the medical providers, the caregivers, if you will, are feeling burnt out and pressured in their work environment. So there's just, it's sort of a perfect storm of things coming together.
So for those who don't know your organization, don't know you, don't know about Healthcare Purchase Alliance of Maine, let's pause for a second and at least tell the audience about that, right? Give them, set the stage for it as we get into this conversation.
Yeah, I mean, interesting. This organization, a lot of people, it's kind of under the radar screens, but actually it's been around about 30 years. It was started about three decades ago. And it was really started by the largest purchasers in the state, employers in the state. And it really was a combination of public-private. We have public payers. We have the state of Maine employees, the teachers and municipalities, and then large and small businesses across the state. And the intent back then was really come together. And is there a way that we can improve the access and the quality and the affordability of healthcare? So the very things we started at the top of this conversation really have been the mission of this entity for three decades now. And we're still doing that. We are now really trying to find ways that we can improve access to patients, that we can improve the quality of care, and at the same time, try to find ways that makes it more affordable for all of us. So we're still out there. We're still pursuing those activities. A good example of the types of things we've done where it really is to the benefit of everybody in Maine. When we started 30 years ago, LeapFrog, which measures hospital patient safety, came on the scene. They rate hospitals like letter grades, A, B, C, D, F. And if you go to a hospital that's rated C or below, you have an 88% higher chance of not coming out of the hospital. So it's a huge difference. And we started 30 years ago and said, gee, we're going to waive co-pays and deductibles if people go to the safest hospitals in Maine. Fast forward to last year, the governor of Maine, Governor Mills, accepted an award. When we started, Maine had some of the most unsafe hospitals in the country from patient safety. And the governor just accepted an award that Maine has had the safest hospitals for the last decade for patient safety. So those are ways that we're really trying to leverage our voices and really trying to move the market so it benefits everybody.
No, it's fabulous in terms of what a shift, right? In terms of where we were to where you are today. So let's start with a basic question. And it seems so simple, Peter. And, you know, if there's such nothing, a thing as simple in healthcare, right? Is there anything simple in healthcare? Let's be honest. What is driving healthcare costs to increase so much? You know, I realize there's so many factors, but if you could break down for, you know, the layman, what is really driving those increases? Because it seems excessive at times.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, sometimes what old is new again. So if you actually go back, you know, almost 30, 40 years now to Uwe Reinhardt back in the 70s, and he actually wrote a paper that said, it's the price is stupid. And if you actually really look at what's driving it, you know, a lot of times there'll be conversations about we're a sicker population, there's more advanced disease states. But if you actually look at the numbers over the last two decades, utilization has stayed relatively flat. We're not using more medical services. What's driving all the cost increases are the price increases that are coming. And some of that has, and certainly it's really accelerated since the Accountable Care Act, as health systems have been able to merge and consolidate and come together. I mean, you have situations now where 80% of the physicians in Maine are owned by health systems. They're not independent. So the integration and sort of the consolidation has really led to real pricing leverage in the marketplace. So a lot of it's pricing. Maybe we'll touch on that a little bit later in the conversation, but certainly there's that. And there's just huge variations in cost and quality. I mean, going back to that LeapFrog, you know, situation or piece that I talked about, which hospital door you walk into for certain procedures can make a big difference in the outcomes. So it's a whole myriad of things. And prescription drugs are increasingly becoming a huge cost driver.
Is there a tech side to this where the costs of higher technologies and I'll say things that we never thought could be, right? Robotics and other things in the healthcare industry is also part of driving the costs. Is there a component of just it's more expensive to use new technology today?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, if you break down what would have been those cost pressures, certainly, I mean, in robotics is a great example. In some ways, yes, it's a very expensive piece of equipment, but it also, on the other hand, eliminates some downstream costs because you're actually substituting, you know, highly skilled surgeons and others for. So it really boils down that, yes, technology is a driver. Certainly the advances in specialty drugs that we're talking about. I mean, there are now some drugs that are costing millions of dollars a year. There's some of that, but there should be some efficiencies at the same time. And just the healthcare delivery system at this point, you know, you think about you and I as consumers. I mean, for the most consumers, if you go in to buy a $50,000 automobile, at least when you purchase the vehicle, you've got a good idea of what's the quality reputation of the car. You see the price sticker, you see what the individual components are. At today, if you and I walked into a hospital, we can walk out and have a several hundred thousand dollar bill and no one's ever talked to us. We just don't know. We go, and there's huge variations. I mean, I'll give you a good example of where, you know, centers of excellence are things that employers are using, saying for certain things like spinal procedures, it really makes a difference. The evidence is showing now for spinal procedures, 50% of the time that medical surgeries are done, they really shouldn't be done. The clinical outcomes are not better. They're actually worse. So there's still a lot of things in medicine. The Institute of Medicine and RAND have come out and said there's estimates that 30 to 40% of all the medical procedures that are done don't add any clinical value. So there's lots of factors to that. Technology is a piece, but it should be offset by, you know, some of the savings you get downstream.
We're, of course, talking with Peter Hayes. He's the president of Health Purchase Alliance of Maine. And, of course, you're listening to the HR Power Hour. I am your host, David Chulo. The show is podcast and also broadcast on WLOB Radio and also at hrpowerhour.com. You know, Peter, deductibles, that's probably the bane of the existence of most normal employees. Because the deductible, you know, used to be you're going to pay about $1,000. Then it's two, three, four, five. By the way, I mentioned thousands, six, seven, get into family plans, eight, nine, 10. That's it, plus prescription costs, plus other things. Do you see any end in sight to those deductibles increasing?
Well, I mean, again, it goes back to, you know, sort of the old sayings, there's good news and bad news. You know, the bad news is that has been one way employers up to this date have coped with the increases that are, you know, multiples of their revenue growth and other things. And you're right, as I had said at the top, it's gotten to the point where even if you have a $2,000 or $3,000 deductible plan, which, you know, I think the average in Maine is north of that, for many, many families, 70% of families, that's catastrophic. I mean, right now, unpaid medical bills is a leading cause of bankruptcy. I mean, it is really, you know, middle America is just getting really and people are not getting medical care because they can't afford it. They're not taking scripts. They're not getting cancer screening. So the bad news is employers have pushed that pretty high. They're now realizing the good news is they can't do any more of that. They absolutely have to find ways that we can get to more higher value care. So I think in some of the things that I'm going to, you know, as we talk about it later in the show, there are some significant changes in the landscape that are going to force employers to really think about. A real good example is there's starting to be public information right now, what a lot of people don't realize, but 70% of the time, if you go in and pay cash at your point of service, it will be less than what you would pay by using your insurance card, which is counterintuitive. I mean, there's one example of a Philly hospital that for joint replacement, if you pay cash, you would pay $15,000. If you use any of your major carrier cards, that procedure would be $30,000. That's just counterintuitive. Why would that be the case? The network, the carriers are supposed to be negotiating a better deal. And there's laws that now say employers only can pay and should pay fair and reasonable price for services. So at some point, the cash price could be a proxy for what's fair and reasonable. So I think what employers and plan sponsors are going to have to do to get to your point about, is there some end in sight? And lots of states are starting to talk about, we need to start to have price regulation or some type of growth regulations on the healthcare industry. So I think those things will start to have an impact on future cost increases.
Do you worry that those regulations could stifle things, or are you concerned about, you know, because the fact is anytime you try to regulate certain things, especially when it comes to pricing, it goes somewhere. And you usually, you know, there's no free lunch on this in terms of, you know, a price control historically doesn't work great. I mean, you can look at even at the milk industry in this state. It's not the best in regards to price controls on the amount you can, you minimal pricing in terms of it. So I'm just saying, I'm using that as an example, but I get concerned when people talk about price controls.
And I'm not necessarily suggesting that, but I'm saying that there is like 8 or 9 states around the country that have started to go down that pathway of growth caps. And I think it's signaling back to the marketplace, you know, either respond or, you know, this is the legislation regulation sort of the last step. And I think what you're going to see is there's much more awareness. There's some reports that have been released publicly. You now can go onto a website. It's called Sage Transparency. You can actually look at every single hospital in America. You can understand what their cost to deliver care is and what they're actually getting paid by individuals and businesses. And for the most part, if it costs, you know, on average, if it costs $10,000 to produce a service, that's their cost. It comes from Medicare cost reports filed by, signed off by the executive team. The average cost that you and I are paying are $30,000. So there's some place between the $10,000 and the $30,000 that might be a fair and reasonable price. And so I think the hope is, and the parallel they're painting is just like the investment industry when it was kind of the Wild West, the 401ks and other things. They put some regulations in around transparency, and that really affected the marketplace. And they're following that same blueprint. So yeah, I think there's hope for the market.
Oh, no, that's great. And we're going to talk more about quality and price transparency tools when we return in the next segment. You're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM and podcasted nationally. In today's highly regulated climate, customized HR solutions are needed more than ever. Career Management Associates can partner with your existing HR department for projects or even serve as your outsourced HR team. From compliance and compensation to investigations and employee relations, CMA provides you trusted HR solutions. Call 207-780-1125 or visit cmacareer.com.
At over 150 years old, Verrill has an illustrious history with more than 7 generations of legal expertise. With more than 130 attorneys across 7 offices from Maine to Washington, D.C., Verrill serves clients across the country and around the world. HR professionals, business leaders, and in-house counsel count on Verrill as one of the premier labor and employment law practices in the Northeast. Contact Verrill at verrill-law.com. That's verrill-law.com.
With Zillow, you're not just looking for a house. You're looking for the bathroom where you'll give your kids shampoo mohawks. The bonus room you'll turn into a gym and work out in every single day, starting tomorrow. You're looking for hardwood floors worthy of your signature dance move, the glitchy robot.
You're not just looking for a house. You're looking for a place for your life to happen. And whether buying or renting, Zillow makes it easy with simple smart search features, photos, video walkthroughs, and more. Zillow, find your way home.
Hi, I'm Susan McVetty.
And I'm Pete McVetty from McVetty's Hearth and Home.
Is there a sale going on at the store right now?
No.
No Hearthstone, Quadrifier, Mendota, Wittes, Blaze King, or Morso sale?
No.
No Yodel, Vermont Castings, or Regency? Oh, there's always a Regency sale.
No.
You're telling me that out of the gazillions of wood, gas, and pellet stoves that we carry, there's not a single sale going on?
Nope.
Oh, what about patio furniture, awnings, grills, smokers, and aluminum docks?
No, just because there isn't a big sale going on doesn't mean that we're not having great deals and still doing free estimates for anyone needing a heating appliance.
Oh, well, good. Just let me know when we're having another sale.
Okay, there's always a bargain to be had if you are looking for one. And we don't need a new heating appliance.
Well, maybe my sister needs one, or my friend, or your sister.
Stop by McVetty's Hearth and Home at 893 Route 1 in Yarmouth, or check out our website at stovesofmaine.com for the latest information, including our sales.
Really? I have to check out the website? Really? And I can't believe Regency isn't having a sale.
And we're back, and you are listening to the HR Power Hour presented by CMAcareer.com and Verrill-law.com. I'm your host, David Chulo. You're listening to the HR Power Hour, educational HR radio. Today, our guest is Peter Hayes. He's the president of Health Purchase Alliance of Maine. And we are talking about what is driving healthcare costs. We're also talking about right now, what are the new quality and price transparency tools? And I got to tell you, Peter, you mentioned in the first segment about that pricing is still the big driver. And that's the truth. And when it comes to the average everyday person, employers, and I don't know the stat, maybe you do. Are employers, what is the percentage of healthcare through employers versus personal? Do you know that? I'm assuming you know the number between the two, or at least an estimate in terms of it. Where, how do they get their healthcare?
Yeah, I mean, I think across the country, still the majority of people are getting their healthcare through plan sponsors. That's changed a little bit with the Accountable Care Act. I do not know the specific number that's business versus the exchanges type of thing. I think almost half the people in Maine either have Medicare or Medicare. So a lot of it's the public pay.
Sure.
And I think it might be weighted sort of 60-40, you know, business to personal on the other side. The exchanges in Maine really have pulled in a lot of people, which is good.
Yeah, regarding getting people on healthcare plans, absolutely. So let's talk about this quality and price transparency tools. You mentioned it a little bit at the end of the segment. How accessible are these going to be? Who's going to provide the data? How do we know the data is accurate? Where's it coming from? Those are the questions that whenever you say, oh, we're going to have a transparency tool, I always smile and go, how transparent?
Yeah, no, it's a great question. And actually, this has been just a landmark sort of process in that. So to answer your first question, there is a public website now. Anybody can go to it. It's Sage Transparency. So you can go out there and there's five sources of data. Three sources of the data are completely in the public domain. A lot of it's from a study done by RAND. It's called 4.0. But it is most states have commercial, like Maine has the Maine Health Data Organization, which collects data. A lot of states have all claim payer databases that went in. They also have pulled large companies. A lot of our members and large companies have submitted all of their data. So the data that is driving that comparison is a very robust, statistically very valid. Anybody that's interested can just Google RAND hospital transparency. It will tell you. It's been well vetted by academia. Rice University has embraced it. It's public. That's one source. Second source is CMS quality data, the star rating systems, very open. That's how CMS, Medicare pays hospitals. That's very public. They also have then the National Academy of State Health Plans, a nonprofit, actually is now measuring hospital finances. Then there's two private databases that include it. So it's been well vetted that this is fairly accurate information. You can go out. It's got every hospital in the country available. You can download it. You can look at it. You can pull it. What it starts to say is, again, every hospital has to file a Medicare cost report. So you can see what it costs the hospital to deliver care. You can also see what they're charging individuals and patients. And on average, if it costs a dollar or costs $1,000 to deliver care, on average across the country, we're paying, you know, $25,000 for that. Or if it's $10,000, we're paying $25,000. There's huge variances, though. Across the country, across the state, across Maine, we're paying about 280% of Medicare. So again, if it's $10,000 to deliver it, we're paying $28,000. If we get to 200% of Medicare, I mean, in any business would be happy with a 200% margin. Corporate profits in America are 7%. So at 200% of Medicare across Maine, it is a 40% reduction in premium. It is a huge, and there's lots of evidence that starts to show efficient hospitals should be deliver care and have positive net margins at about 200% of Medicare or so. The other thing the data shows, for a lot of times, you've heard a long time from health systems and providers, they're losing their shirts on Medicare, Maine Care, charity care. It has the information in there. And in fact, the efficiently run hospitals are not losing money on Medicare. They're actually making money on Medicare. So it starts to really debunk the myth and the talking points. It also shows what hospitals are doing for charity care. The not-for-profit hospitals, 70% of hospitals don't pay any federal state income taxes because they provide a lot of charity care. New studies show they're actually providing far less charity care than for-profit hospitals. So it starts to put information in front of people. And the most important thing, you can actually go to a hospital and you can look up any hospital in Maine. You can figure out what they need to cover all of their operating expenses, Medicare, main care, charity care, all those things. And then what are they charging? And you'll be able to see there's a big difference between what they need to do to break even and what they're actually charging the commercial. And then you can start to look. So in Maine, I think the numbers work out. We're paying about 300% of Medicare. The national average is about 200% of Medicare. So maybe there's a way, but to get to your point in the first segment, one of the market forces that is starting to happen is let's not work off a master, you know, charge list, a retail price list, which, you know, like a car, when you go to buy a car, there's a sticker in the window, but Right. Everybody knows you Right. Don't pay that sticker. You usually pay $100 over invoice, so $500 over invoice. So this new payment methodology is looking to say, and it's already here in Maine, let's just say we're going to pay 200% of Medicare or 250. So I think that's sort of what's out there, but it finally, you're able to go and everybody's able to look at the information and start to have a conversation about facts that will then inform what to do. So that's all out there. It's all public and available to anybody that wants to look at it.
So these transparency tools are there, and you know, I'm going to say that's great, should be great. But there's two things that I think about. One, if I think about employers, the truth is most employers do not have and will not have the time to look at all this stuff. It's just the truth. Most employers don't have the bandwidth to be able, and even the manpower to be looking at a lot of this. So they're going to trust their brokers. They're going to trust their carriers to provide them certain information. And of course, as you know, there's a small pool in Maine, the small pool market in terms of small businesses, which is pretty much has a set price and that's what it is. And the reality is most of the businesses in Maine fit within that category. If you look at the number in terms of number of employees, most of them are under 50 employees or under 100 employees here in the state. So how do you see that working so that organizations or companies can feel comfortable about the information they're receiving, that they're going to get the best rate based on this transparency?
Well, I think the first shoe that dropped was this transparency information. And actually, hospitals were required over a year ago to post 300 of their shoppable services and the prices. And the vast majority of hospitals did not do that. They weren't compliant. They would rather pay a $300 a day penalty. And because it started to expose some of those contracts you're talking about. But the second shoe that dropped is, you're right, the individual consumer is not going to go out and look at that information to make choices necessarily. So the other shoe that dropped, it now becomes the employer's responsibility to do that. So going back to a couple examples, if in Maine, and we have this in Maine, if you have a situation where a hospital that's delivering high quality care can deliver a joint replacement for $20,000, and you have another hospital that does not have the same quality of care, and that joint replacement's $50,000, there's a law that says employers cannot offer or cannot pay for benefits if they're not fair and reasonable. So in this case, a fair and reasonable price, if it's determined it's $20,000, if they still have that health system or hospital in their network that's charging $50,000, then they're liable. They're liable for the difference. So the plan sponsors are going to demand a much higher level of accountability to make sure that they are only paying fair and reasonable prices. And frankly, it's to protect the employees, because the minute dollars go from the employer into a benefit plan, the only people that are supposed to benefit from those dollars are their employees and families. And there had been a bunch, much like retirement side, when that didn't happen, there were class action litigation suits that put employers, so that now the onus is completely on the employers to make sure their brokers and consultants are doing that work for them. So I think that's the difference. Now there's accountability. And you're right, it shouldn't be on the patient. It is on, you know, the employer that's providing the benefits.
So, as I mentioned, the employers usually rely upon, of course, the brokers and the healthcare providers to provide information to them that they can a look at a review when they're deciding on a plan on a yearly basis or whatever, or if they're self-insured. There's, of course, a million different ways in terms of what that's doing. Tell me about the education that is being provided by either the brokers or the, you know, the healthcare providers in letting people know about this, because you know, I will tell you, based upon what I'm hearing, I don't see much of this coming out or being talked about that much right now. Maybe it is in certain levels, I should say HRs in our business in terms of covering organizations. We haven't heard about this. So, you know, from that perspective, it's important for us to know, how do you get this information? Where is it being talked about? Are the large brokers talking about this, or are they still being quiet about it?
Insightful and great question. And there is, there's lots of silence. I mean, I've spoken to this at several national conferences now. Most employers don't know about it. And it actually goes, some components of this were effective 7/1. I mean, it's passed, and some employers can be facing $100 per person fine per day if certain things aren't done. And you're right. I mean, it's going to be much like what happened. I keep using the analogy of the 401k industry, because that's what this legislation is modeled over. It's going to take a while, but you're absolutely right. The smaller employers aren't aware. Some of the brokers aren't aware. What happened in the 401k industry, in the Department of Labor has says they're already going to do this. They're going to make an example of somebody. There is going to be a headline litigation suit probably brought by a union saying their employer didn't do X, Y, Z. And then all of a sudden it's going to become front and center. And I'll give you a good example. It's already happened. I mean, one of the things that is required by law is you have to have your broker consultant disclose to you all of their compensation they get from doing your book of business. There was a school district in Florida, outside of Kissimmee, Florida, that had a contract with a national consultant house guaranteeing them that their compensation flow would be no more than $200,000. They discovered that broker actually got over $2 million in compensation. And now there's a class action suit that has been kicked up that's starting to say that that was fraudulent business practices. It's going to take things like that that are really going to start engaging the brokers and consultants. Just like anything else, it's complex, it's confusing. It became effective 7/1. I think the enforcement agencies will be lenient, but it's not going away.
We're talking with Peter Hayes, president of Health Purchase Alliance of Maine. You're listening to the HR Power Hour. I'm your host, David Chulo. And of course, we're talking about, you know, new quality price transparency tools and also new fiduciary accountability rules, which is really what you're talking about, Peter, which is the things that I you know, it's fascinating, right? I've been in HR long enough to know that rules and things change, and sometimes they're under the radar. You don't even know things have happened. And it's, I remember an attorney saying, you know, it just happened to be, we looked something up and we found this, right? Didn't even know it was in the bill or, you know, in the actual law. When they got to the regulation, it got snuck in, or it was done what it is. So there is this lack, I would say, of transparency that is not from a price perspective, because I think the tools are doing that, but maybe a lack of information transparency. Let's put it that way. What are some of the things that you think employers need to know, and again, or need to think about when asking their brokers or asking their carriers about what they need to do about it? And does this, by the way, go into effect for if they're on using MainCare or if they're using, you know, any other part of it? Is that also involved in this? I didn't ask that question, but I suppose I should.
Yeah. So maybe, I mean, it's a complex question. Maybe just kind of going back to, you know, what is a definition or a fiduciary? A lot of people don't realize, but right now a fiduciary is anybody that exercises discretion over plan assets. So you're talking about CEOs, CFOs, board members, benefit committees, VPs of HR, benefit consultants, benefit trusts. So it's a broad brush of who's responsible. And the consequences, if you don't act in fiduciary best interest, there's a personal liability to those individuals we just talked about to restore any losses to the plan. So again, going back to our earlier example, if you paid $70,000, your health plan paid $70,000 to a provider, when the fair market price was 20, then there's a 50,000 liability that's going to be assigned to the fiduciaries. There's a 20% penalty. You can be removed from fiduciary status, and there could be criminal penalties. So, I mean, what's on the book are pretty concerning sort of liabilities that companies are going to have to start thinking about how they manage to. So that's sort of what's out there. I agree with you that it's going to take time. To answer your question, presumably, I don't know if there are exceptions for things like main care and other things. But what this will pressure health plans, and this is sort of, you know, some of the conversations that are starting to take place between health system and health plans. Health plans need to think about how they are actually going to do hospital contracting going forward. They ultimately, you know, they ultimately have fiduciary responsibility that they need to make sure they're negotiating the best prices they can for all of their plan members. It's going to really spread the accountability further to find a way that, and again, going back to the state of Maine, we know there's almost, you know, you can pay 200% of Medicare, or you can pay almost 400% of Medicare for the same services. And that creates a real issue from equity issues. Why should people that live in certain parts of the state have to pay twice as much as someone that lives in another part of the state for the same medical service for the same quality? So that's the power of transparency. And that's how I think you're going to get to some of the change we talked about at the top of the program.
Yeah, this is fascinating information. And I'm pretty sure that this information is not known by a lot of employers out there. I feel comfortable enough saying that.
Yeah, you're absolutely right.
I would be very surprised if I did a survey of most of the organizations that we know, not only work with, but know that they would have any idea what we're talking about here today. And so that's what makes this so important. And that's why we're so grateful you're on today. And we're going to talk more about the actual, this issue, this concern, and actually what employers need to know and do to move forward in this next segment. You're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM and podcast nationally. We'll be right back. Educational HR Radio is critical to your organization's success, and our sponsors understand the value this program brings to owners, C-suite professionals, and the HR community. We are honored and thank our sponsoring law firms of Verrill, Sheehan Finney, Jackson Lewis, and McLean Middleton. Our partner sponsors of Healthcare Purchase Alliance and Strategic HR. Want to be a sponsor of the HR Power Hour? Text 603-303-6124 and say, we want to be an HR Power Hour sponsor.
Founded in 1958, Jackson Lewis is a national law firm with a local presence. The firm's 765 attorneys practicing in 54 locations throughout the U.S. and Puerto Rico provide a wide range of resources to address every aspect of the employer-employee relationship. HR professionals, business and in-house counsels, and C-suite professionals count on Jackson Lewis as it has one of the most active employee litigation practices in the United States. Contact them today at jacksonlewis.com. That's jacksonlewis.com.
At highway speeds, the average text takes your eyes off the road for about 5 seconds. That's enough time to travel the length of a football field. Stop texts, stoprex.org. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM. I'm your host, David Chulo, and it is presented by CMAcareer.com and Verrill-Law.com. Remember, the HR Power Hour is podcast on all national podcast channels. We also, of course, you can listen to the show directly at HRPowerHour.com. And, of course, WLOB 100.5 FM here in Maine. And you can do that right at 10 o'clock on Saturdays when we broadcast. It is very exciting to have today our guest, Peter Hayes. He's the co-founder and president of Maine Health Purchaser Alliance. And I got to tell you, Peter, this has been a fascinating conversation. I love doing this show because I always learn something. And today I am frighteningly scared that I've learned way too much part of it, but you know, it's all good. Don't get me wrong. It's just, I'm like, oh my God, my head hurts. So that's all good. It's all good. That's why we have you here today. Let's talk a little bit about what I'll call nuts and bolts.
Yeah.
How do employers start gathering this information? What do they do with it? How do they use it? Let's get into the practical part for employers that are listening today.
Yeah, and I think we've touched on it all through the conversation. This is something that's very new. It's very complex. It has not been communicated very well. So some starting points will be absolutely plans. You know, employers should start asking their brokers and consultants to get them information about this and what it is they need to do. I mean, that's kind of, you know, that's sort of the first step to say, hey, they've heard something. They know some things become effective 7/1 July. There's things that become effective by year end. The simple things for, you know, 7/1 you're supposed to have are things like ask your broker to provide you what their, I mean, this is specified by law, what their direct and indirect compensation is. By year end, they have to take certain things out of their existing contracts with their health plan. Things like they have to remove gag orders, which are things that health plans say they can't tell you about their contracts or other things. They need to take out of it data restrictions on it. So there's very definitive things that are very clearly outlined in the regulations that need to be done by year end, that brokers and consultants should be able to tell them. So that's the starting point. And again, we had talked in the last segment, there are pretty significant financial risk to employers, but much like anything, going back to the broker's compensation, the enforcement agencies like the Department of Labor in the early years, they're just going to want to make sure you're making good faith efforts to do things. You have to have documented that you at least ask for these materials. So I think there's a fairly low bar at the beginning for employers. And there's some real things they can do. As long as they check off that list, they'll be covered. And again, I'm not sure about your distribution. I can certainly send you those things, send you a list. I don't know if there's a way to get that out, but their broker or consultant, they have this information. They're aware of it. And if you ask them, they need to provide it to you.
Peter, is there a link somewhere, either on your site or at the state level, that has this information directly? We can certainly get the information out and provide it out, but it's always easier if there's a one-stop shop that they can go to and see all this information.
I mean, that's a great question. We have some of that information up on our website that anybody can just do a web search for Healthcare Purchaser Alliance of Maine and go to our website. Some of this information and resources will be there. Certainly anybody is welcome to give us a call. We have a team. We've been immersed in this for months now. So we're fairly aware. We're glad to talk to anybody anytime if they have any questions or they want to find out more. But you're right. There's at this point, there's not necessarily a real good, easy access website to go to. But again, just really, you know, this should be something your brokers and consultants, you should be able to ask them, and they need to get the information for you so you're aware.
Got it. And by the way, your website is purchaseralliance.org. That's purchaseralliance.org. And we'll make sure that goes out on the HR Power eWest when this show airs. So Peter, obviously this information, they should contact their brokers. They should get the basic information to make sure that they're covered under compliance and that they are moving forward with compliance. And I would suggest somebody needs to put together either the DOL or somebody needs to put together a place where all this should be. Yep. So there's a very simple one lockdown location. I think that would be a great service for employers as well as just the general people. So there's a project for you, Peter, right? It's a project for you.
Well, we're working on it. We've got it, as you speak this morning, we had someone, we've been working, we also work at the National Alliance level. So every state has an organization like us. So they all report up. We actually have an attorney that has put out a checklist of things that employers need to know we're going to post it. So we will have it and look for it on our website. But we just got it this morning. It's some attorneys that have been following this, and it's a simple, easy checklist. Check the box of what employers need to do.
Well, that would be outstanding. And when you get that, please notify us and we will make sure that goes out to our HR Power Hour site. So we'll make sure that goes out not only on the site, but also we'll provide it to all our email blast lists and get that out there.
Thank you.
From that perspective, is there anything else that employers should really think about in terms of the future? Because, you said there's this year, but how about next year? Or how about the year after? What are some of the future things in regards to trends maybe for employers? What do they need to do next?
It's going to be a heavy lift, as you suggested. I mean, healthcare, as we talked about at the top, is very complex. A lot of businesses, it's not their core thing. They rely on brokers and consultants. I think some things to ask your brokers and consultants increasingly going forward are going to be things like direct contracting. Are there, for those health systems which have high quality, is there a way you can directly contract for services? That's really starting to grow. There's ways to use centers of excellence. Not all hospitals, not all surgeons, not all places are the same. We have a center of excellence program. Actually, the state of Maine is using it called Carrum Health. And it's really designed, it's really beneficial to the patient. There is no co-pays, no deductibles, no out-of-pocket costs if you go to the high-value providers. Their net promoter score is 100, meaning Amazon's at 70. Net promoter score reflects what the patient experience is. It is about 45% less than the going rates, and the quality is much better. So increasingly ask your brokers, consultants about centers of excellence. Similarly to episodes of care, going back to the transparency list I talked about for cash prices, there are things like maternities where you can pay on an episode of care basis. So in other words, those types of things, transparency tools we've already talked about. Think about advanced primary care. That is where patients can get to primary care virtually and on site. And it really does a lot to manage downstream, where you go downstream for care and services. We've talked a little bit about pivoting to reference-based pricing, which means there are vendors in this state right now, New Balance and some others are using them, that really has a completely transparent way of pricing. That is a way for an employer to make sure that they're paying fair and reasonable costs across their network. So those are things that they can think about. The other thing that's really bubbling up on the national scene that we had talked about earlier, there is a ton of activity that are policy-based. So they're chambers of commerce and some others, things around anti-competitive practices. Some of these health systems are large enough now where they're saying that if they're going to be in network, all healthcare has to be delivered by their system. Nobody can go outside their system for care, which starts to be a real issue of choice and access and that type of thing. There's growth caps and rate regulations. Those are all things that are sort of on the menu.
No, that's great. And that gives us a great overview to think about. And we're going to wrap this up in the last segment of the HR Power Hour. Again, heard here on WLOB 100.5 FM, and we'll be right back.
In today's highly regulated climate, customized HR solutions are needed more than ever. Career Management Associates can partner with your existing HR department for projects or even serve as your outsourced HR team. From compliance and compensation to investigations and employer relations, CMA provides you trusted HR solutions. Call 207-780-1125 or visit cmacareer.com.
Founded in 1958, Jackson Lewis is a national law firm with a local presence. The firm's 765 attorneys practicing in 54 locations throughout the U.S. and Puerto Rico provide a wide range of resources to address every aspect of the employer-employee relationship. HR professionals, business and in-house counsels, and C-suite professionals count on Jackson Lewis as it has one of the most active employee litigation practices in the United States. Contact them today at jacksonlewis.com. That's jacksonlewis.com.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour presented by CMAcareer.com and Verrill-Law.com. I'm your host, David Chulo, and you're listening to Educational HR Radio. We're talking today with Peter Hayes. He is the president of Healthcare Purchase Alliance of Maine. And I got to tell you, Peter, you have done an outstanding job today of scaring the living bejesus out of me and all our listeners. And that is exactly what your goal was. Congratulations, you've done it well. So, but all kidding aside, you know, employers may be saying, I'd like to learn more. I'd like to understand more about what Healthcare Purchase Alliance of Maine can do for us. Why don't you take a few minutes here and kind of, you know, give us your elevator pitch. Why use the Healthcare Purchase Alliance?
Yeah, I mean, I think just as this conversation has illustrated, that we really exist. There are a bunch of employers, public, private, across the state that got together 30 years ago saying, gee, there's really some things that cut across. There's really nobody that speaks for the employers in the healthcare space. I mean, you have a lot of hospital association and sort of the medical association and others. You have chambers, but the chambers are usually more involved in business policy issues. We are just sheerly focused. Our mission, we're nonprofit, literally we're nonprofit. We're really trying to say, how do we make care a little bit better, safer, and more affordable for everybody in Maine? And so we have the luxury, or we have a really talented team. We are looking at these things all the time. So a lot of times your brokers and consultants, they're doing lots of other things. There's increasingly much more legislation around healthcare. We're really trying to bring the purchaser voice to the employer voice to the table. We really want to become the trusted place where everybody can come to try to get information about healthcare. This is something, this talk today is something we've been involved with at the national level. It's something that is coming. So we are trying to help employers stay a little bit ahead of the curve, inform them of things they should be asking their brokers and consultants and others. We really think we're the one of the few places in Maine where that voice gets consolidated up. And it's really combining the public interest with the private interest to really, how do we cut across and make healthcare better for everybody in Maine? That's sort of our mission and goal. And we do provider groups and roundtables and education series. We've done it for, to answer your question earlier, and like we have done 3 or 4 presentations of this in our all member meetings that anybody is welcome to attend. So we try to get the word out a little bit in advance of things that employers need to be thinking about it and put it on their screens. And so there's really 4 rubrics there. We do data analytics. We take in data. We will give you business intelligence to help make your people healthier and wealthier. We have a place where employers just can network with each other and share their best practices. We try to do things that will address access and affordability. So those are sort of ways that we are bringing the employer's voice together to make it a little bit better for all of us.
No, that's awesome. That's a fabulous overview in regards to that. You know, I got to tell you, this has been a really good conversation, and we'll try to get the information out as soon as you provide it to us in regards to that. But people should go to your website, purchaseralliance.org. That's purchaser, P-U-R-C-H-A-S-E-R, alliance.org. That's the site you should go to. I'm sure Peter would love to hear from you. His email's on there, right? Please reach out, ask questions. It's your money. It's your organization. It's your talent. And today, more than ever, we need to engage to make sure that we can keep and retain great talent. Peter, thank you so much for being on the show today.
Thank you. Thank you for the opportunity.
You're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM. Thank you, everyone, for listening, and catch us every week at 10 a.m. on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM or 1310 a.m. and streaming live at WLOBradio.com. Podcasts of this show and every show are available at HRPowerHour.com. Have a great week, everyone, and remember, HR management is critical to your business's success.